reading from Hebrews chapter 4, verse 14. Therefore, since we have a great high priest who has gone through the heavens, Jesus, the Son of God, let us hold firmly to the faith we profess. Oh, magnify the Lord with me. Let us exalt his name together. It is Monday, June 2nd, 2025. Welcome, Iowa listeners and longtime KMDY listeners. We're broadcasting on 90.9 FM from Macomb to Nauvoo to Keokuk and a bunch of towns throughout southeast Iowa and west central Illinois. We welcome you to the Great News Media family of listeners. For those new to the Mark and Friends broadcast, we're currently on Monday doing a series through the book of Hebrews, generally as preached by Pastor Jason Epperson of CU Church, but today we're going to hear from Pastor Matt Clark. And then oftentimes on Tuesday, I called it Testimony Tuesday, where I had a variety of interviews, but the last many months I've had a variety of series by Pastor Rick Warren of Saddleback Church. And so tomorrow and Wednesday, you'll hear a message by him. And then Thursday, it's sweet Donna Leland. You might have heard her last Friday as we announced KMDY going on the air. And then on Friday, sometimes I have a group of studio guests with me or other special broadcasts. So I hope God uses today's program and any future Mark and Friends to bless you on your faith journey. Here's Pastor Mark Clark of CU Church, covering Hebrews chapter 4, verse 14, through Hebrews chapter 5, verse 10.
We're in the book of Hebrews. We don't necessarily know who the author is, but we know who he wrote it to. It was written to Jewish Christians. And especially with what we're going to read and talk about today, they were Jewish Christians who had obviously left their Jewish religion to start following Jesus. And you could imagine there was a pressure that they would feel leaving something they've known all of their life to go do something else. And there was also some persecution that they were facing because of the decision that they had made to do this. And so there's these Jewish Christians who are in that moment in time in their own relationship with Jesus, trying to figure it out. And there's this writer who wrote this letter to them. And as he's writing this letter, he's doing lots of things. But one of the things that he's doing is he's breaking down different walls of that Jewish religion that they've built up, that they've relied on for all of their life. And he's zeroing in on some of those things. So like if you remember at the very beginning of this letter, the Hebrews writer talked just about Jesus and he elevated the view of Jesus, that Jesus is the heir of all things, that Jesus created the world with his breath, that he holds it all together, that Jesus is the exact image and radiance of the Father. He elevates Jesus, and then he does a little comparison. Jesus is greater than Moses. Jesus is greater than Joshua. And if you don't know who those people were, it would have sparked the discussion. It would have sparked the conversation, right? That's what would happen whenever this Hebrews writer would be saying that Jesus is greater than Moses. Jesus is greater than Joshua. These significant figures in their religious history, they would have been like, oh, hang on. And he's doing that. And then we get to today and he zeroes in on another part of their religion that they would have held really tightly. That would have been something really significant for them. And he's using Jesus to speak into it. And spoiler alert, if I could lay an umbrella over all of Hebrews, it's Jesus is better than whatever you put on the other end of it. That's Hebrews. And so he's doing that. And so he's doing it again today. He's doing it again today. And the place that he's zeroing in on is the Jewish religion and their belief of the role that the high priest takes on. And I'll explain that here in a second. But before I explain it, I just want to read it. Hebrews chapter 4, starting in verse 14. Since then, we have a great high priest who has passed through the heavens, Jesus, the Son of God. Let us hold fast our confession, for we do not have a high priest who is unable to sympathize with our weakness, but one who in every respect has been tempted as we are, yet without sin. Let us then with confidence draw near to the throne of grace that we may receive mercy and find grace in time of need. For every high priest chosen from among men is appointed to act on behalf of men in relation to God to offer gifts and sacrifices for sins. He can deal gently with the ignorant and the wayward, since he himself is beset with weakness. Because of this, he is obligated to offer sacrifice for his own sins, just as he does for those of the people. And no one takes this honor for himself, but only when called by God, just as Aaron was. So, as also Christ did not exalt himself to be made a high priest, but was appointed by him who said, "You are my son, today I have begotten you." As he also says in another place, "You are a priest forever, after the order of Melchizedek." In the days of his flesh, Jesus offered up prayers and supplications and loud cries and tears to him who was able to save him from death, and he was heard because of his reverence. Although he was a son, he learned obedience through what he suffered, and being made perfect, he became the source of eternal salvation to all who obey him, being designated by God a high priest after the order of Melchizedek. All right, so here we go. Back to the very beginning. Remembering this high priest idea, here's how it starts. "Since then, we have a great high priest who has passed through the heavens, Jesus, the Son of God." There's something I need to set up for you, and that's what the high priest's role would have represented for these Jewish Christians who were there listening to this sermon being preached, is what it is. This sermon being preached, and they're grabbing hold of different pieces of it. The high priest had maybe one of the most significant roles in all of their religious journey. That his job in the Old Covenant, in the Old Testament part of their life, the high priest oversaw the ritual worship of God. Meaning that these Jewish Christians would rely on the high priest for their relationship with the Lord. That if they found themselves out of alignment with God, they couldn't make that right on their own. They had to go to the high priest. And one day a year, on the Day of Atonement, this high priest would go into this place called the Most Holy Place. Sometimes we would call it the Holy of Holies. It's the holiest place that you could go in the temple. And he would go there one day a year on the Day of Atonement, and he would make sacrifices for all the people. It was the only way that they could experience forgiveness. But they couldn't be in the presence of God. And so they needed this high priest to perform this act for them so that they could then be in right relationship with the Lord. And it was only happened one day a year. So you can imagine the level that they would put this high priest to. And right at the very beginning of this section, this Hebrews preacher is looking at all these people who have this high priest that they've elevated to this place. And who is he telling is the greatest high priest? Jesus. So he's knocking down a wall. He's zeroing in on something that they would hold tightly, and he's speaking into it. And here's what he says next. He says, "Let us hold fast our confession, for we do not have a high priest who is unable to sympathize with our weakness, but one who in every respect has been tempted as we are, yet without sin. Let us then with confidence draw near to the throne of grace, that we may receive mercy and find grace in our time of need." I'm going to take a risk right here, and I'm not going to talk about those 2.5 verses. I want you to hang on to them. I want you to circle them, and I'm going to come back to them, because everything else that the Hebrews writer says is what making those two passages come to life. And it really is the so what of the sermon today, is those verses that I just read. So I'm going to ask you just to hang on to them, and I'm going to come back to them. But first, I want to go through the rest of it and listen to how this Hebrews preacher begins to describe who Jesus is. And because of who Jesus is, we can do the things that I just read. So hang on. I hope this isn't too big of a risk. I feel like we can handle it, though. So in chapter 5, verse 1, he says, "For every high priest," he starts to compare it to their human high priest. "For every high priest chosen from among men is appointed to act on behalf of men in relation to God, to offer gifts and sacrifices for sins." That's the part I just explained to us, that the role that the high priest would take. He, the high priest, the human one, can deal gently with the ignorant and the wayward. Feels like those words shouldn't be in the Bible, but they are. Ignorant. Let me tell you what it means. It means deliberately disregarding God in our lives. But who's been ignorant? Right? It's us. Right? Wayward. Here's the wayward. That we would wander from the things of God with our thoughts and our habits. So I would live my life with no regard for God, or I would wander away from God in the things that I think and in the things that I do. Anybody in here besides me? Right? He's describing the human high priest, and he's leveling to the rest of humanity that's who he is, since he himself is beset with weakness, that he has the same weaknesses that all of the people do. Because of this, he is obligated to offer sacrifice for his own sin, just as he does for those of the people. That he can't purify, the human high priest can't purify the sins of all the people until he first what? Purifies himself, because he's ignorant and wayward just like the rest of us. That's a big deal. That's a big deal because remember the comparison is against Jesus. And what is two things that Jesus is not? Ignorant and wayward. There's a lot of words you can use to describe him. I wouldn't use those two, right? He's not those things. And so he says, and no one takes this honor for himself, but only when he's called by God, just as Aaron was. Aaron was the first high priest that they had. He would have been somebody that they elevated at a high, high level because he was the original high priest that was appointed to be the high priest for all of their ancestors hundreds of years ago, but they would have known who he was, and he was appointed by God. You know who else was appointed by God? Here's what it says. So also Christ did not exalt himself to be made high priest. This is him saying that Jesus didn't bring the glory upon himself. Think every little kid sporting event that you go to. I shouldn't say every, but most every little kid sporting event that you go to, and mine in particular, it's basketball. After they make a shot, what do? I refer to them as look at me's, right? They do some look at me's. They beat their chest a little bit, and they want you to look at them because who do they want to give the glory to? Them. Me too. I was that player. That's not what Jesus is doing here. He's not beating his chest and trying to get the glory from himself. So as Christ also did not exalt himself to be made high priest, he didn't come out and saying, yeah, that's me. Listen to what it says. But was appointed by him who said, you are my son. This is Psalm chapter 2, verse 7. You are my son. Today I have begotten you. We don't talk like that much. We don't use that language. So I did a little research with my research assistant, Google, this morning. I Googled begotten. I was just curious, like, where would Google take me on that? And it took me on a wild ride. All right, we went all over the place on what it means to be begotten. But here's the idea of why it's a word that's important here. Maybe if you grew up in church and you memorized the old King James version of John 3:16, it referred to Jesus as the only begotten son. You remember that? That reference, that language. We just don't use it. But what it would mean is that God, the Father of Jesus, has given Jesus all the same authorities and rights that the Father has, that they're one in the same, that they're one in the same. I realize that is a high and lofty theological idea that we could wander around for a long period of time. Wouldn't be with me because I wouldn't be able to explain it to you. That's the best I can do is to say that all that he's been given is the same authorities, the same rights, the same powers as what the Father has, that they're one in the same. So he's saying, you are my son. Today I have begotten you, that you are the radiance of my glory and the exact imprint of who I am. You remember where that was said? It was actually in Hebrews chapter 1, verse 3, when he was describing who Jesus was. So there's the idea. And he also says in another place, you are a priest forever after the order of Melchizedek. Melchizedek is an Old Testament high priest that shows up in Genesis, and we'll talk about this more in a couple weeks. So I'm going to give you like a quick snippet. Here's the idea of what he is saying here is that God's sovereignty appointed Jesus. He's using a lot of words to say that, but God's sovereignty appointed Jesus. It's illustrating the supremacy of Jesus, that he is over top of Aaron in the priestly line. So it's a long-winded way for a preacher to say that Jesus is greater than your greatest human high priest, Aaron, because he was appointed by God just like he was. But he's significantly greater because he was not ignorant and he was not wayward. I told you, it was a long-winded way to say something that was really short. But he's elevating Jesus to this way. And listen to what he says next. He says, in the days of his flesh, Jesus. So in the time from the Christmas story, you remember we talk about at Christmas, the birth of Jesus, from the time of the birth of Jesus to his death, in the time of his flesh, when he walked human life, just like we do, in the time of his flesh, Jesus offered up prayers and supplications. Church words, prayers is a word that means that we ask God for something, just to ask. It's a prayer. Supplications, sometimes it's translated as the word petitions, that we would make petitions. We don't always use that word. I'll use it like this. Please. Have you ever done that? Have you ever gotten to the place where you are pleading to God for something? My guess is most of us in here have. Whether or not we even believe that he'll answer them or not, we've gotten to a place in our life where we've pleaded with God about something. That's the idea of prayers and supplications. And I don't know about you, but sometimes I come into a place like this and I think things like, I don't know how to do that. That doesn't necessarily make sense to me. What does that look like for me in my life as I walk into a place like this? Let me give you an example. We all did this morning. Maybe you're thinking, when did we do that? I don't remember doing that. We all did this morning. Remember when we sang songs? Remember that one song in particular? Maybe you sang the words. Maybe you just read them. Maybe you just stood there, but we were singing, I Speak Jesus. Remember that song? What were we doing there collectively as a church? We were offering prayers and supplications. We were asking God for things that he would speak the name of Jesus over our families. I'm asking God of that. We were pleading of God things. Speak the name of Jesus over depression. We're pleading with God about that. So we collectively were making prayers and supplications to God and to who he is. And he's talking about how Jesus did the same thing when he was human. He offered those prayers and supplications with loud cries and tears to him who was able to save him from death. He was offering them to his Father, the same thing that we would do, walking in our same shoes. And he was heard because of his reverence, that God heard his prayers and his supplications. He heard his asks and he heard his petitions because of his reverence. Sometimes that phrase will get translated or even talked about. It's the fear of God, reverence. It doesn't mean that I'm afraid of God. That's not what it means. It doesn't mean that we're afraid of who he is, but there is a reverence about us to him. I'll put it into my language. He's saying that Jesus was fully submissive to the will of the Father, that he was fully submissive to what God would ask him to do and who God would call him to be. And so because of his reverence, he heard his prayers and his supplications. This is actually a reference to a very specific moment in the life of Jesus. It was actually Matthew chapter 26 in the Garden of Gethsemane when Jesus is on his way to the cross. And you remember, he goes into that garden and he prays a prayer. And he prays it with such intensity that his sweat turns to blood. And you remember his prayer? He says this, Father, take this cup from me. But then what does he say? Not my will, but yours be done. That's reverence. That it's not about me and what I want. It's about you and what you want for me. That's reverence. But also hear me say, that's hard. To fully submit to the will of someone else. To fully submit to the will, and let me say desires. To fully submit to the desires that God would have for you and for me. Reverence. So God hears his prayers because of his reverence. Although he was a son, he learned obedience through what he suffered. It's a big statement. He learned obedience through what he suffered. What it doesn't say about Jesus is Jesus didn't learn obedience the way that we learn obedience. How do we typically learn obedience? It's the way that I teach my kids obedience. It's through disobedience. They do something wrong, and I gently correct them. Other times, not as gently, right? But sometimes gently. And that's how I teach them obedience, because they are disobedient in their nature. It's not saying that about Jesus. What it's saying about Jesus is that he learned obedience by being submissive to what God had invited him to and who God was calling him to be. That's how he learned obedience, not through disobedience like we were, which is good, because he has to be elevated to a level that is above us, that is above the human high priest, that he's greater. It's one of the reasons that he's greater is that he didn't have to learn obedience the same way that we do. He lived it differently. Then he says this, and being made perfect, he became the source of eternal salvation to all who obey him. This is important for all of us in the room today. I'll read it again. And being made perfect, he became the source of eternal salvation to all who obey him. Obey is the same idea. He became the source of eternal salvation to all who would submit their life to his. But it says that he was made perfect. Don't think that he was imperfect and needed to be made perfect. It wasn't his imperfections that needed to be made perfect. Here's what the word means. It means to make something complete or to finish it. So he finished something that he was set out to do, something that he was appointed to do, something that he was called to do. What did he make perfect? I'll try to say this as simply as I can. When Jesus went to the cross with all of you and me in mind, meaning that he did something for us that we couldn't do for ourselves, he completed it. What did he complete? Our eternal salvation, that we could walk into a relationship with Jesus for eternity because he completed the task that God assigned him to do. And so we can now have forever eternity with Jesus because of that. Big deal. It brings all of us into the conversation that my eternal salvation is secure because of what Jesus did and not because of anything that I do. Think about this group of people that he's talking to. They are holding to their religion. There's something that they can do to earn their relationship with God. And he's saying there's nothing that you can do. It was completed by Jesus and Jesus alone, and nothing that you can do for it. Big deal. Weight off the shoulders. So let me go back to those two verses that I told you to hang on to. Because this setup of Jesus, I'll describe it, the application, the so what. What does all this do for us? What does it mean for us as we sit here today? It goes back to those two verses that there are some things that he implores of us because of Jesus and who he is and what he's done and his role being greater than all the high priests as he speaks to these Jewish Christians. But this is for us today as we sit here in our spot. Here's what he says. He says, let us, back to verse 14, let us hold fast our confession. For we do not have a high priest who is unable to sympathize with our weaknesses, but one who in every respect has been tempted as we are, yet without sin. He says, let us hold fast our confession. We don't use that language. Let me describe what it means to hold fast. It's the idea that you would hold on to something so tightly that it would never slip out of your hands, that you couldn't let it go. That you've grasped it so tightly that it's going to lead you in every place that you need to go because you're not going to let it. It's what the Hebrews writer is telling them today. Remember all the stuff we said about Jesus? He's saying, hold fast to your confession. Hold fast to the moment that you professed with your mouth and you believed in your heart that Jesus is Lord and you will be saved. Where have we seen that today? Right here. And this Hebrews writer is looking at all of these Jewish Christians in the same way that he's looking at us today. And he's saying, don't let go of the confession and the profession you've made about Jesus and who he is in your life. Because when you are getting swept under by the river, it's the only thing that can pull you out. The only thing. And he talks about these temptations. You remember that? He says that who is unable to sympathize with our weakness. This is a word that can be like a physical weakness. It can be like a general weakness, but it can also be like a moral weakness. And he connects it to temptation and he connects it to sin. The weakness that he's describing is the same one that we have. It's a propensity to sin, to fall out of alignment with God, using the words of the passage, ignorant and wayward. Right? It's our propensity to fall into that. What was the temptation of these Jewish Christians? It doesn't tell us, but I'm going to take a semi-educated guess that one of the temptations that they had was to walk back into the life that they knew before they had made a confession of Jesus. To walk back into the religion that they had a better understanding of. Let me put it into our language. The temptation for them was to walk back to the person they used to be before they found Jesus. Ever had that temptation? And what he is saying is, hold fast to your confession. Don't let it go. That when it's trying to slip away, grab hold of it tighter and allow it to pull you out. And then he gives us one more thing. Not only should we never let go of our confession of Jesus and who he is, he also says, let us then with confidence draw near to the throne of grace. Draw near is a present tense verb. And what it is implying is that it's ongoing, that it's constant, that it's continually, that we would do it over and over and over and over again. And quickly, I got to explain something for you. When the high priest would go into the Holy of Holies, there was a thing there called the mercy seat. And he would go to the mercy seat on behalf of all of the people. And there was a fear that went along with the mercy seat, because if you weren't purified from it, it was dangerous. And so that nobody else wanted to approach it. And the high priest was the only one who could. And now listen to the language that he says here. He says, draw near to the throne of grace. It sounds a lot like the mercy seat. And he says to draw near to that with confidence. Here's what it means, and this is for us today. Confidence means boldness. But don't think self-promoting boldness. It's not like that type of boldness. It's a humility that comes along with boldness. And it also implies transparency. That I would approach the throne of grace with a boldness to be transparent about who I really am. Which is what we like to hide the most. But he's saying, you don't need the high priest to do that. You can approach God. You can approach Jesus every day, every moment. And you can approach him with confidence. You can have the boldness to share who you really are with him. And listen to what that does. We may receive mercy and grace to help in time of need. Think about it. We walk into this place with all kinds of needs that we need the mercy and grace of Jesus for. And what he is telling us is that we can constantly approach him with those needs, and he will respond to those needs with mercy and grace. And so I say all that to say these things. What do you take from this today? Don't let go of your commitment to Jesus. And if you've never made one, there's no better time than today. Constantly approach Jesus with what you need. And if there's anything that I've learned in my 45 years of life, that everything that I go through in life and everything that I wander through and everything that happens, it only makes sense with Jesus. It's what the Hebrew writer is saying. There's a key to this whole thing, and you're missing it, and you're missing it. And that key is Jesus.
Yes, that key is Jesus. If you want to know more about having a relationship with him, how to trust the Bible, to learn about God's love for you, call 1-888-NEED-HIM. That's 1-888-NEED-HIM. You were just listening to a Sunday morning message from a week ago Sunday by Pastor Matt Clark of CU Church. He's filling in for Pastor Jason Epperson, who's on vacation, and his message covered Hebrews chapter 4, verse 14 through Hebrews chapter 5, verse 10. And if you missed a portion of today's broadcast, want to hear it again or pass it on to a friend, stop by greatnewsradio.org or wluj.org and click on the Mark and Friends tab. For our great KMDY listeners or those that are tuning in for the first time to Mark and Friends, there's about 12 years of archived programs so you can get caught up on this Hebrews study or the hundreds upon hundreds of other interviews and special guests I've had during this time. Well, thanks for listening. Thanks for being a part of our radio listening family. This is Mark Burns with the Ministry of Great News Media. God bless you and have a great day and night.